Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We've got a lot of news headlines to talk about today, so I'm just going to dig right in. This headline, there have been stories I've been saving here in our hopper to get to when we had a few minutes without other pressing issues. And tomorrow, of course, Real Science Friday, and the plan is to talk about trees. Trees, what a fascinating topic. And the evolution of trees, oh boy, is it an interesting topic, the evidence that God created trees directly. So we have time today for some headlines. I have a number of conservative Christian friends who get upset when we are in a war and Congress has not declared war, and they say, therefore, it's an illegal war because Congress hasn't declared war. And I like to point out to people that whether or not something is right or wrong does not depend on our own processes. I realize that men make side deals. God has given us the big deal. And then we human beings, we make side deals. Whether something is right or wrong is dependent on what God views a particular issue or situation as, and how it reflects on his principles. So I've often pointed out that Congress doesn't want to declare war because it is a political animal. So even when congressmen support a war, they don't want to actually go on record and vote for it because they don't want to take the responsibility or the blame, or if things don't go well, they don't want that to hurt their reelection. So they're a bunch of cowards. So here is two headlines from the Drudge Report from just a couple weeks ago. U.S. House votes no on continuing Obama's war in Libya. So that's the first headline. Second headline, then votes against defunding. You get it? So they vote. They say, no, we're against the war in Libya. And then they vote to continue funding the war. That's a parable right there. It's a perfect synopsis of the reality that democracies are dysfunctional forms of government where men who lust for power try to push themselves up and above and over other men so that they can lord it over their neighbors. Primarily, they make their decisions and their conclusions based on whether or not something will be beneficial for their own career or for their own party. So you've got Obama dropping bombs on people, and the liberals tend to be quiet. You got Bush dropping bombs on people, and the conservatives tend to be quiet. You've got Obama pushing government health care, and the liberals don't complain, the conservatives do. But when Bush pushes government health care, then the conservatives remain quiet. Any surprise there for anyone? You've got, I remember just this past week or so, Republican talk show hosts and callers to Republican shows complaining about the light bulbs that were increasingly forced to buy because that's what's in the stores, and potentially losing our favored incandescent bulbs. We might not be able to get them. We got to buy these squiggly fluorescent light bulbs. Many of us don't like them because they've got mercury in them, and you got kids in the house, and I've read the 12 pages of instructions on what to do from the federal government if one of your light bulbs break. I mean, it's horrifying. So I've heard conservatives saying, we're not going to let Obama take away our light bulbs. And I had to go back to look that up because I didn't remember that it was Obama. And I looked it up, and sure enough, it was George W. Bush who signed into law the Light Bulb Confiscation Act. Isn't that what it was called? The Light Bulb Confiscation Act? Well, no, it's not really called that, but the Light Bulb Ban Act. So now we've got these these light bulbs that some people don't like. I mean, they give some people, this is an extreme rarity, I know, but they give some people convulsions, epileptics, because of the way they work. And they're a different spectrum. Restaurants hate them, and art galleries hate them. Things don't look warm and good like they would look in something closer to sunlight. They look artificial. So art galleries are saying, you want us to put what? Where? Come on. And restaurants are saying, how do we have a warm, comfortable feeling with those blazing blue bulbs? It just makes everything look weird. And the fact that there's mercury in millions of these things that have been sold. If a light bulb breaks, one of these things, and this has happened in our house, and it makes you sick to your stomach because the government procedure on cleanup, first of all, you have to get everybody out of that part of the building, open the doors and windows to air out whatever dust might be in the air. They originally said that you'd have to take a razor blade and cut out your rug, any part of the rug that the light bulb broke on. But now they say you take tape, you can't vacuum it, because then you'll have mercury in your vacuum, and every time you vacuum, you'll spread mercury to, you know, the kids in your house, the kids in the crib, the grandkids who come and lick the floor. Now they say you can't vacuum it, you get down on your hands and knees, but please use a face mask and maybe rubber gloves, and take tape inside out and keep pressing the tape against the rug and pulling up all the dust and the glass chips and all with the mercury. Hopefully you'll get most of the mercury. So I've despised this. You know, liberals, forget about whether or not the government should be in your bedroom. Liberals go in your toilet bowl. The liberals go in your toilet bowl. And I'm talking about Republicans and Democrats. And liberals tell you which light to buy. And they say, oh, well, this is going to save consumers a lot of money. Well, let the consumers decide if they want light bulbs with mercury and a weird flickering light and one that takes a few seconds to turn on, or if they want to spend a little bit more money and get a nice warm colored light. So the Republicans are taking away our light bulbs. Don't let the Republicans take away your light bulbs. Fight back. I don't think we'll get Obama to help us on that. But we'll have to remember to put on George W. Bush's memorial. He took away our light bulbs. That'll be part of his legacy. Whenever there's a horrendous ruling, I like to look to see who nominated this judge, a Republican president or a Democratic president? And so often it's Republican judges who've given us our most horrendous rulings so often, and go right back to Roe v. Wade. 7 of the 9 justices on the U.S. Supreme Court were Republicans, and it was written by a Republican judge, Harry Blackmun, written. And it's been a Republican U.S. Supreme Court ever since, with the majority Republican, and that Republican Supreme Court has kept abortion nationwide the de facto reality in our land. Focus on the Family goes on the air, and they say, we've got to stop all this immorality. We've got to get Republican judges elected. We've got to get Republican judges confirmed. At least give them an up or down vote. Give them a hearing. And I think, but you guys have a $100 million budget. We, Bob and Yurt Live, we've got a shoestring here. This microphone I'm talking into now, it's hanging from the ceiling on a shoestring. If I just blew on it, it would go way away from me and it'd come way back right here. Just blow a, there it goes, swinging on a shoestring. We've got a shoestring budget here. And we could figure out that the very rulings that Focus on the Family is enraged over were issued by Republican judges who were nominated by Republican presidents. let's just not be fools. The Bible says, the Bible talks about the wise, they don't think they need God. Not the wise in reality, but those who are worldly wise. The wealthy, they think they don't need God. They don't need him. They're too smart for him. They got enough money. They provide whatever they want. They got it on their own. They don't need God. But the fools, we can be fools for Christ's sake. The world will view us as fools, but we shouldn't act like fools. That's what's happening. We act like fools. Barack Obama, he's also a fool. It's not as though conservative Republicans have a corner on the market of absurdity. They don't. I know a lot of us think that Republicans are the only fools out there, but it's not true. The Democrats are also fools. And I think about Barack Obama, he swooped into office and he was going to woo the Arab world. The Arab world was going to turn from their hatred of America, and they were going to embrace us and love us because Obama put out his arms to hug them. It was all going to be nice. So now Zogby International has released the results of a poll that was done jointly with the Arab American Institute. And they found out that most Arab countries, and we'll talk about the results from four of them today, most Arab countries view America less favorably today than they did when George W. Bush was in office. Even during the last year of the Bush administration, Arab countries like America way less today than they did then, and including the president, when you ask them about Barack Obama. So here from the Zogby International poll from Egypt, when President Bush left office, nearly 1 out of 10 of Egyptians had a favorable attitude toward the United States, about 10%, almost 10%. Today, only 5% of Egyptians said they have a favorable opinion of the United States and of its president, Barack Obama. Half. When you don't have many friends, you don't want to lose half of the ones you got. And Obama has accomplished that so far for us. And it's not only Egypt. And really, this is a brand new poll. In Egypt, Obama went out on a limb and supposedly supported their populist uprising. You know, help grease the skids for it with international support. Why don't they love Barack Obama? Why don't they love America for standing with the military and against Mubarak? Why not? Why don't they love us? The Zogby poll showed similar figures from Morocco and Jordan and the United Arab Emirates. Around the Arab world, there is increasing dislike of America and our president and our foreign policy. Now, the UAE, was Drudge the one that linked to that story about one of the world's richest men in, where was that? Abu Dhabi in the UAE, United Arab Emirates. He's so wealthy. He's worth over $20 billion. He hired workers to dig into the desert. He owns an island right off the coast of Abu Dhabi, there in the Persian Gulf. And he owns this island, and he had them using bulldozers, earth-moving equipment, begin to carve his name in the sand. And the first two letters, it's enormous. In the time of Noah, his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and so much of the Arab world today, Muslims and Arabs share in this fascination with Ham, H-A-M. It's everywhere. Muhammad and Hamas, and it's just everywhere. And so this guy, his name is Hamad, H-A-M-A-D, and he started having his name carved into the desert, and the letters are so big that you can read his name from space. You could read his name. His letters are 1 kilometer in height. And the 5 letters, H-A-M-A-D, they're 2 miles long. 2 miles long. So from the beginning of the H to the end of the D is 2 miles. And I know something about making a large sign with big letters. And let me tell you, when Barack Obama came to Denver, we erected the world's largest protest sign on the foothills of the Rocky Mountains facing east, facing Denver and its suburbs. You could read the sign from 8 miles away. You could see it from 20 miles away. Millions of people saw it with their own eyes, and then it went around the world. It was somewhat transient because the media didn't like the message, so they didn't rerun it in the evening news. It aired live when it happened, and it aired around the world, especially in America. In fact, there was a college student in Chicago in her dorm, and they had the news on, and she called her parents, and she said, "Mom, did you see the sign in our backyard?" Her mom and dad were there, and they said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "There's a great sign in our backyard." This is the house that was closest to the mountain, North Table Mountain, where we erected the sign. This was done by American Right to Life, and the sign said, "DNC destroys unborn children." It was 666 feet wide and about 520 feet tall. An enormous sign. We succeeded. Guinness gave us an official attempt application number for the world's largest protest sign. We told them the goal was to build it 666 feet wide, and we did it. I mean, the end result, the photos from the Associated Press and all the media, the photos look exactly like the computer-generated design documents. I mean, we did it exactly. And then when Guinness saw what the message was, they didn't like it. So they, after the fact, recategorized us. And they said, "Well, we're not going to let you apply." We already applied, and we did it. We had a government scientist document the actual size of the sign. And they said, "Well, we're going to reclassify you, not the world's largest protest sign, but the world's largest sign, and you don't qualify because there was a larger sign on the floor of the desert in Israel, and it was a flag. It was a flag made as a sign laying flat on the floor, so nobody could see it. They sent up one plane to take a picture of it, and that was it, but it was big. It was bigger than our sign. But if this qualifies as a sign, I think it does, then this is the world's largest sign, 1 kilometer high, 1,000 meters high, and 2 miles wide. And it says Hamad, H-A-M-A-D, and that's in the United Arab Emirates, the UAE. So in the UAE, and probably Hamad, probably, likes America even less than he did when George W. Bush was president. Obama, like other liberals, thought that if you say nice things to people, then they'll change their minds and they'll do what is right. Like in Egypt, right? Today, there is widespread approval of Osama bin Laden in Egypt, far more so than approval for Barack Obama. How's that? You know that, right? That's one of the results of this poll. There is far more support in Egypt for Osama bin Laden, the leading terrorist in the world, than there is for Barack Obama, who wants to hug them all. Barack Obama's own rating has been plummeting. Osama bin Laden, this year, he's the most popular person in this poll, with a favorability ranking of 21%. More than 1 in 5 Egyptians view Osama bin Laden favorably. it's such a good lesson in that when you're dealing with issues of right and wrong, being nice is not the fundamental issue. So often when there's a murderer who's been caught and the neighbors are interviewed, they say, he was so nice. He was such a nice guy. For example, if there's a child molester who lives on the block, he will be the nicest guy on the block. If there was a vote taken, who's the nicest neighbor, the child molester would win the vote. He'd be the nicest neighbor. And nice is not what it's cracked up to be. I mean, nice is important in the right context. But in the wrong context, you got to be nicer than God. You got to be nicer than God. In the wrong context, you think that you're showing the world how to be good because you're so nice to the wicked. In reality, in order for you to maintain that position, you have to be nicer than God. And that's why we have a Bible study album here at Bob and Yurt Live, and it's titled Nicer Than God. We have an article, Nicer Than God, and we have quite a Bible study. It deals with judging and forgiving, and people say you shouldn't call people names. How much of the Bible would we have to remove if we're going to say that you shouldn't call people names, like fools or wicked or sexual immorality described in a single terse term that's extremely offensive? So Barack Obama is nicer than God, and it's not getting him anywhere. It won't get you anywhere either, by the way. Now, I've got two more stories here I want to do. The woman who woke up in Quebec, she was brain dead in a hospital. This woman was sent to the hospital, 76 years old. Her name is Madeleine Gauron, G-A-U-R-O-N. She needed a minor operation. She went to the hospital in St. Croix. And when she was recovering, the hospital staff gave her solid food, and she had not been eating solid food, not even at home, for a long period of time. They weren't aware of that. They gave her solid food, and they left her unattended, and she choked on the food, not surprisingly, and she went into a coma. So then the doctors told the family that their mother was brain dead with no hope of recovery, and they talked about her eyes, her eyeballs. You know, her eyeballs would be particularly valuable. And they asked if the family would agree to turning their mother into an organ donor, a breathing organ donor, because she's in a coma. They said, well, she's brain dead, so she's really dead. And the family said, we don't know that she's really dead. I mean, she needed a minor operation, but she was, you know, she wasn't young. She wasn't in great shape, but she wasn't dead. They said, well, she's dead now. And they said, well, she's still breathing. Yeah, but she's dead. She's brain dead. So the family said, no, we want more evidence that she's really dead because she doesn't look dead to us. So the next day, the family was astonished when their mother woke up. She woke up. She came out of the coma. She sat up and she asked for something to eat. And they gave her yogurt. The family knew that she couldn't eat solid food, and they gave her yogurt. Now she's not only up, and she immediately recognized her family. She's not only up and eating, but talking and walking. She's the kind of walking around person that even U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia said, well, you know, I think when the Constitution talks about the right to life, he said, I think it's referring to walking around people. That's what he said. That's what he said. He said, I think it refers to walking around people. So mom here in Quebec, maybe Antonin Scalia would have been okay with cutting her up because she wasn't a walking around person. Neither are babies in a crib. They're not walking around people. What I like about LifeSite News, LifeSiteNews.com, they do a much better job of correcting the morality of the story to the story. Life News, I don't use Life News because it's just too morally bankrupt. It's a pro-life news site, but it's just morally bankrupt. LifeSite News does a much better job. So they report that story, and then they go on to say that these kinds of anecdotes are piling up where patients who are said to be brain dead recover. Do you remember the Russian woman who died from a heart attack? She died from a heart attack that she may have never had. She was only 49 years old. She was declared dead, and she woke up at her own funeral. Do you remember that? That happened less than a month ago. Her name is Fogliu Mukamatsizananov, and I pronounced that exactly right. Her husband was distraught. They were at her funeral, and she woke up in her coffin and realized she's at her own funeral, and she died 12 minutes later of a heart attack. That's a true story. You get it at the NewYorkDailyNews.com. Just New York Daily News, Russian woman died heart attack at her own funeral. So when they tell you grandma is brain dead, we should question. We take the principles of God's word. It's okay to let a dying person die. It is not okay to kill someone who's not dying. You don't starve them to death. You don't deny them food and water. If they die, if a dying person is dying, it's okay to die. That's not immoral. It is immoral to kill them.